Everyone, welcome to The Final Four is Not on the Schedule. I'm your host, Eric, alongside with expert analyst, Rod. Thanks for joining us on the best MSU basketball podcast featuring an in-depth recruiting, game matchup, and post-game analysis. We dive deep to give you the best tools to enjoy the Spartans and impress your friends and family. Hey, everybody. Eric alongside Rod here. Happy Thanksgiving on a day that didn't turn out the way we'd hoped for Michigan State as they fall to Alabama 81-70 in the first round of the PK85 tournament. Before we begin, I'd like to thank a new patron Mark Reynolds for joining at the Draymond Green level, and also one-time gift via PayPal from Will Kurtz. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for your support. We really appreciate it. It keeps the show running, keeps things going along. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving, Rod?
Yeah, pretty normal one. Watch the Lions manage to lose. So
it's a tradition,
same as it ever was. I'm actually not that upset. The Lions can't get me upset anymore, but that train left the station many, many, many years ago. But whatever. It was an entertaining game at least. Yep. It was not bad until tonight, but also not unexpected given the events of the last few days, which Absolutely. Is probably what we should talk about at the outset, I guess.
I think so too. Yeah. Well, I would say that I'm always excited to get some pumpkin pie. I know I may be the outlier, but I got a little pumpkin and pecan pie. So it's nice to get those once a year, sort of like eggnog. It's just sort of like a seasonal thing that I wouldn't eat a lot, but every once in a while, it's really nice. Yeah. So since we made a recording in our preview of the show, obviously, or the game, obviously things changed quite a bit. Malik Hall got injured in practice on Monday, where he got a stress reaction in his foot, which does not require surgery. So what we initially heard was that it was potentially he would be out 1 to 2 months. And so they're expecting, again, 3 weeks. So that's good news in what could have been a much worse news, I suppose. Also, Jayden Akins, who got injured in the end of that Villanova game, it was his operative side, his foot, but it was not where he had surgery. So it was a sort of a different foot injury. And so they just elected to keep him out for the game. So we were down a starter and, our sixth man off the bench, probably two best athletes defensively, two of our, better defensive players who can handle what Alabama is going to throw at us. And so in many ways, I guess, things kind of went the way you expected. But before talking about the game, I guess the injuries, and I would just want to, I'll get this out for it. I'm sure this is probably something you'll want to touch on as well. I'm a little tired of people assuming that Michigan State's the only team that has injuries. That there's some sort of weird, mysterious problem with our team that, I don't know, Izzo has them playing barefoot or something in practice and that they're more susceptible to getting these problems. You don't expect, now, if Michigan State had a rash of rib fractures, I'd start wondering what's going on at practice and, because it's not nature of the game. But, you expect certain types of injuries in certain types of sports, right? And so I think foot, knee, ankle injuries are super common in basketball because that's what where all the stress is put on in your body. Also the thought that there's always a foot injury in Michigan State is also probably not true because I don't think we had one last year. And I don't know if we even had one the year before that since Langford.
How many guys? Well, okay. Here's the better question. So Mateen Cleaves had one, which caused him to miss the entirety of the non-conference schedule in the national championship season. Okay, so that's one. Josh Langford, certainly. But that was, in terms of everything I have heard, that was a very, very unique situation. And one that look, probability and odds is a tough game to play. And sometimes you come up snake eyes and it feels to me that was what happened to Josh,
Yeah.
Beyond that, I mean, Kalen Lucas had an injury that was very serious. It wasn't a foot injury. It was an Achilles, as you say, there's certain types of injuries that happen to basketball players because it's the nature of the sport that they're playing, the stress that they're putting those parts of the body under, right? I mean, I'm no doctor, but that would be my general assumption. And this idea that it only happens to Michigan State. Look, Alabama can tell you about injuries. The Burnett kid who was playing tonight missed all of last season with a lower body injury. Quinterly, who played very well tonight, I thought, especially in the second half, he got hurt in the end of this their NCAA tournament loss last year, and it's considered a miracle that he's fought his way back. But they've had everybody has injuries. I mean, I remember a year not all that long ago where Michigan's entire season went in the toilet because Caris LeVert got hurt with a lower body injury. I think that was something to do with a knee. So, that stuff is so tired. That talk, the talk about this is why you needed to go into the portal. Well, first of all, point of order, about 95% of the portal talk was about MSU refusing to go get a five-man. If they'd gone and gotten a five-man, that wouldn't have helped what ailed them here. And secondly, they did try on a couple guys. They tried on a kid named Jalen Bridges, who was a very good player. If they'd gotten Jalen Bridges, okay, that would have been a big addition. That's a guy who can play at roughly the Malik Hall, Jaden Akins level. They tried. They didn't get him. Micah Parrish, a kid from Oakland who ended up at San Diego State. I don't know. He's put up some numbers. I watched him play the last two nights. I'm not convinced he moves the needle for Michigan State. And that's the problem, ultimately, is that if you're going to tell me that you think it's a simple thing to go get a guy, one, who is capable of helping at anywhere close to the level Paul and Akins are, and two, said player would be willing to play a limited role just waiting around for somebody to get hurt. Stop watching sports. Just stop. You don't understand enough. So, look, it's not fun. It's not what you want. You know, optimally, it's a rare thing that Michigan State would have two guys out at the same time. Doesn't happen very often, but it's happened. This is the way it is. I can tell you this. My mindset, despite what I just witnessed, is far more optimistic than I was roughly, 54, 55 hours ago. Because correct. I first heard about this on Tuesday, right around noon. And at that time, the person I heard about it from said that they had heard, they had come to understand that it might be season ending. So that's where the journey started for me, was they might have lost Malik Hall for the season. Then later that same day, so we're talking Tuesday night, I had heard stress fracture 1 to 2 months. And then that turned into what eventually has been disclosed, which is a stress reaction, not a fracture. So my understanding, and since you're the only one with an MD on their wall, I'll defer to you, but my understanding is the stress reaction is essentially catching a problem before it becomes a fracture. Right. So I think that's accurate. So that's what they've done here. And they're talking about 3 weeks. Well, if they stick to that timeline and he's able to play, that means you've essentially got him back before Christmas. Now that doesn't get you out of the woods completely, because you've got the rest of this tournament, which we'll talk about. You've got a road game at Notre Dame, and then you've got those two Big Ten games at Penn State and at home against Northwestern. So you've still got a number of games that you got to get through. But if you can get through those, and even if you lose some more, which they very well might, this isn't an impossible task by any means to get things right back on track, particularly since I also expect them to have Akins back, I would assume, for Notre Dame. Now, I know they've sat him out, and given that they sat him out in this one, I would expect he doesn't play tomorrow either. Who knows about Sunday? The way this tournament works, they take Saturday off. So they're going to play tomorrow night. Bad news for all of you listening to this. It's the late game, 12:30. But after that, they get the day off, and then they go back at it on Sunday to wrap it up against whomever they're playing. So maybe Akins plays in that one. I don't know. What I have been told, and this is the same person who told me about Hall, same person who updated me on Akins, went from 50-50 to, you know, less than 25% this morning to him not playing. What I have been told is that this is not the same injury. It's the same foot. It's not the same injury. They don't believe it's severe at all. And here's the important part, I think, which puts it into perspective. If this were an NCAA tournament game, he would have played. That's what I was told. So that doesn't mean you've got somebody who's completely incapacitated. It means that they're doing exactly what Izzo said they were going to do, which is not risk anything further happening to him for the sake of playing three games in Portland. And so just to help you keep our listeners keep their heads together, that's what's going on. So, you know, look, things can go wrong when it comes to injuries, you know. Nobody thought Joshua Langford would go on the journey he went on, you know. Now, I think that's an extreme outlier, but you never know. So we're hopeful that with Malik Hall, it's 3 weeks and that takes care of it. But, you know, we've got to see. But that's the situation. And so for me, that changed pretty dramatically the way this tournament shakes out, and in particularly this game tonight, because it could not have been worse where those injuries happened for Michigan State in terms of facing Alabama, because as you all just seen, you know, Brandon Miller, who's the guy that Malik Hall certainly would have guarded, and I wouldn't have been surprised to see a healthy Jaden Akins get a crack at him too. That Michigan State just did not have a good defensive matchup for him, and boy, he took advantage of it. I mean, he was really, really good and pretty dominant when the game was won. You know, things.
Hats off to him for what he did.
Yeah, it was, you know, he did exactly what you would expect. You know, you see a weakness and you exploit it. Very talented kid, every bit the player that he's reported to be. But would I have liked to see what would have happened if Malik Hall was guarding him? Yes, I would. You know, I think it was just. I'm disappointed in some of the things that Michigan State did and didn't do. But on the other hand, there were some good things here, believe it or not. And the fact is, for 19 minutes, they played about as well as I could have expected them to play, all things considered. Just the roof started caving in right at the end of the first half. And then, again, it was Brandon Miller, and then Brandon Miller early in the second half, and it was basically game over. You know, but I liked the way they fought. I liked the way that the five men played for the most part. I think Trey Holloman showed out. I thought Tyson Walker played really well. His shooting numbers weren't spectacular, but I liked the aggressiveness he played with. You know, that's probably about where it stops. But there were some of those things I like. And, you know, we can talk also about the things I didn't like, too. So.
You never want to just minimize everything, but I think it's important to just take a step back, look at the calendar. It's November. It's not February or March. And so these losses, yes, you want to win every game you can play. It's, you know, important for seeding at the end of the season. But what's most important is to make sure that when you get whatever seeding you get, that you have the full complement of players and you have your maximum, you know, strength going in, right? So to jeopardize someone at this stage, like, you know, Akins, doesn't make any sense.
Just not going to do it. Yeah.
No, right. And you know, and as far as Hall goes, it's November. You know, when you look at winning championships, would you rather win the Big Ten or would you rather win the PK85? I mean, there's no question, right?
And I will say this for anybody who wants to get upset about, well, this is going to have an impact on seeding in March. Well, first of all, you got to get there. And I know Michigan State fans are spoiled. And look, I don't think this team at this point, it would be alarmist in the extreme to talk about that. But it does actually add up when you think about the things you just mentioned. You got to play this for the long run. So you want Malik Hall and Jaden Akins to be able to impact the lion's share of your season rather than cashing your chips on a tournament in November? Come on. Yeah. Look, By the way, the last time they held one of these events, PK80, Michigan State won it. Anybody care in 2022 that they won that? No, they mostly care about the fact that they couldn't hit a shot against Syracuse, you know, in March. Right. So that tells you these things are great events. They're fun basketball. They give you opportunities to develop and learn things as a team. I'm the biggest booster you can find of them, but they don't make or break a season. For Michigan State, even if you're concerned about March implications, I would tell you this. Generally speaking, almost pretty much any season I've ever witnessed, what Michigan State will get is what they deserve based on what they do in the Big Ten. And with the way the Big Ten is shaking out right now, I would suggest, and this is a good news, bad news proposition, I think the league looks a little better than I thought it would.
Yeah.
And so we're still likely going to be talking about a lot of significant wins once you get into the league. And that takes care of, you know, you take care of business in the Big Ten, you're taking care of business in terms of what your March looks like. And then the other thing too is, since when has Michigan State needed a one seed to do damage? You know, yeah, I mean,
right. Exactly.
They had won the national championship season. They also had one in 2012 and got beat in the Sweet 16. I can think of a lot of other seasons. They made it to a Final Four and Elite Eight, and they didn't have a one seed. So I do not think at this point, I am, and maybe I'll be proven wrong, but despite the strong start to the year, I have not gotten close to believing that this is a likely team to be a one seed, you know, come March. Maybe they will surprise us and they win the Big Ten and they'll get there. But I'm not really too concerned about that stuff, which is why I can't get exercised about a loss like this. By the way, we'd also be saying all these same things if Michigan State had played with a full complement of players and had the same result tonight. I guarantee you that, because I've said these things many, many times before. It's too bad.
Outside of being more surprised that they lost this badly, yes, you know, or not that, right. This badly, but you know, if they lost the same
that,
way, yeah.
And that probably, you know, that would have been more trouble, obviously.
Yeah.
But still not cause to, you know, lose your head.
Right.
But yeah, it was, I think, you know, if we talk about, for me, probably the most disappointing thing in this game, it's Pierre Brooks. Pierre Brooks is going to have an opportunity, no matter what, to stake a claim to a consistently bigger role. He has to. And that will be true even when Jaden Akins comes back. They're still going to play Pierre more because Malik's out. And so, you know, you saw him maybe playing a little bit of four tonight, although we saw a lot of Carson Cooper at four, which was, you know, out of necessity, but was still interesting. Not surprising to me, but interesting. And so Pierre's going to get those minutes. And, you know, I'm not expecting Pierre Brooks to become Malik Hall overnight. That's not going to happen. But you hope to see signs defensively, and this was an extremely, extremely tough cover for him to have to guard Miller. That's a challenge. But I didn't like was not that he gave up baskets. I didn't like the way that happened, because a lot of it, especially a couple of segments late in that first half, and especially even more so the last one, were not moments where you say, oh, Pierre's just a step slow, right? It wasn't that. It was mental. It was failure to recognize a situation. And that's more troubling, because what I want to see is a guy using better judgments and making smarter decisions on the defensive end. And I didn't see that tonight. So that was disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say in general, they just seem disconnected a lot of times in defense.
Yeah.
And I think some of that you can attribute to the fact that people may be a little bit out of position. They're certainly not playing with each other on the floor,
sure.
Right?
Look, there were some lineups out there tonight that, good God, I mean, you just would not ever have anticipated seeing, right? And you're also talking about, in my mind, when you lose Akins and Hall, you're talking about I think this is fair to say, given the start to Malik all season, you're talking about two of their best defensive players, and it becomes a domino effect too. You know,
yeah,
you lose those guys. Well, maybe Hogard or Walker feel they've got to do more, and then they get out of position. You know, there was a lot. MSU had a lot of trouble with the blow bys in this game, which led to a lot of dunks for Alabama. And some of that was a strategic choice, I think. Michigan State was playing up to try to limit threes. Remember, this is a team when their last game took 46 three-point shots. Well, MSU didn't want to do that. They didn't want to let them do that. And they did. But they paid for it. I think some of that was a domino effect. You've got guys in different spots guarding different players than they normally would be, and it becomes difficult to keep the whole thing together, you know? So that I didn't like. You know, MSU, obviously, especially in the second half, just couldn't buy a shot. And that's not an excuse. It's just that it happens. They had a lot of good looks that didn't go. just the way it is, right?
I think, you know, it's contagious. I think, you know, Walker was the only one who's kind of seemed to have.
Even he went through a stretch in the second half where he got good shots.
Yeah, they had that 6-minute stretch where it got stretched out to, 16 points
18.
Or so. That kind
he
of.
Got I as mean,
that
big was sort as 18.
Of,
yeah. 18,
yeah, just kind of finished yeah, the game at
exactly,
that point. Yeah,
because they just couldn't. It was funny. They had, if I remember the way it went, they had gotten it down to 8 and actually had a couple of possessions where they could have gotten it even closer. And they just could hit a shot. And eventually Alabama started hitting some shots, and that was the ball game. You know, they just put, it was the final nail in the coffin. So that's one of those things, you know, that's going to happen. Again, that's not making excuses. I think Alabama was, they played better defensively than I thought they might. They were tough, but again, you take two of your top six out of the lineup, I'd like to see Alabama guard the real Michigan State. I'm not saying they couldn't do a job, but I'd like to see it.
Well, let me read Pierre Brooks' stat line before we get off Brooks here. So he played 33 minutes, so he had the third highest amount of minutes in the game. He was 2-for-6 from the field, 1-of-4 from three. He had 9 rebounds,
okay,
4 of them offensive. He had one turnover and, you know, ended with 5 points. So the one thing I like about Brooks, and I'm hoping the defense sort of comes around, you know, the defensive awareness, the, you know, recognition you got to play 30 seconds of defense, right? Not 28 or 26 yep. or whatever. I like the fact that he's not afraid to get to mix it up and to get in there. And I mean, I think it shows when he, with his rebounding, especially in the offensive end. I mean, he had 4 of the offensive rebounds for the team, led the team in rebounds by quite a bit. So, you know, in that sense, I think he was a plus. I know he got lost a lot in defense, and there's no question about that. But I think a lot of that comes to being out there and getting used to playing. And I think, and, you know, seeing sets from other teams and stuff. And I recognize the problem, and I know people want him to be further along, but I think we also remind ourselves he has not played much.
Well, that is true.
It's not often you get a guy like Sissoko who has never played and then comes in and actually looks pretty good, like he knows what he's doing. I think it's much more likely that it's going to be like a Brooks where you have a guy who just needs some time.
Yeah, that's true. And look, I'm impressed with the rebounding numbers. I didn't realize he'd gotten quite that many. I'll try to put a finer point on it. I do not expect him to be all defense. But here's the deal. Pierre Brooks has some physical limitations to be able to guard wings. That's just the truth. His foot speed is not, you know, and lateral movement is not ideal. So if you're going to improve that, you can do two things that can help you if you have those physical limitations. One of them is you can get in great shape. And I don't think he's in great shape. I think he's in good shape. I don't think he's in great shape. And there is a difference, right? And, you know, that's something I compared him when he was being recruited to Denzel Valentine. And he's not the same player Denzel was. He's certainly not the ball handler Denzel was. But I saw similarities in terms of their body type and their versatility. And I still think that there are some similarities there. But, you know, Denzel got himself into really good shape over the course of his MSU career. And he was ahead of where Pierre is now. So that's the first thing. The second thing that Denzel did that really, really made him, gave him a chance to be the star that he became, is he used his head to become a better defensive player. The way that you get better when you have that kind of physical limitation is you start thinking the game better than your opponents. And that comes with film study, that comes with, you know, an ability to translate what you're seeing on film to the court, all of those things. Pierre Brooks is a very smart kid. I believe he was a 4-point student in high school. He's not a dumb guy. So I believe that the intellectual horsepower is probably there. Sometimes that doesn't always translate to basketball IQ, but offensively, I've seen enough of him over the years. I think he's a smart player, but he's got to start finding ways to translate that and impact the basketball, the game on the court that way. That's how he's going to be able to make a difference. And right now, I haven't seen it yet. I want to see it. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan, and I think he's got certain elements that this team really can use, but he's got to change. He's got to make changes in terms of what he's doing. It's clear to me. I can't speak to all the specifics. No one out who's not inside the program can, but I can just tell you this game tonight, I saw no difference from any other game I've seen him play in terms of his defensive awareness. And if that doesn't improve, he's not going to get where he needs to be. So I like the rebounding. Yeah, no question. I agree with you. And I've mentioned that in earlier games that he will show you flashes as a rebounder. But man, if he can't check better, he can't play a major role. And so he's got the opportunity now. I mean, it's there for the next 3 weeks. Pierre Brooks is going to play a lot of basketball. And so he has every opportunity he could ever ask for to demonstrate clearly why he deserves a consistent major role on this team. And it's up to him.
And I would say, too, when it comes to, you know, if you want to look at a silver lining for an injury, not that you ever want anyone injured, I mean, clearly, but an injury early in the season, it allows opportunities for people who may not even later in the season get as many minutes, but it allows them the opportunity to get that experience so that when they do come in later, they're much more seasoned and they have a better idea what's going on. And I think you're getting, like, Brooks is a great example, a guy who we probably would not have expected playing more than 10, 12 minutes, maybe this game, you know, now he's playing 33, but also you see Jackson Kohler.
Yep.
He logs 19 minutes. He plays he plays more than Sissoko actually, who played 17. Mm-hmm. Carson Cooper played 12 minutes, and Holloman even got in for 15, and we saw kind of a three guard lineup with he and Hogard and Walker. And I think those, we've seen this in Michigan State where players come in because of injury and they end up playing. And Tillman, I think that's why he really got his start right when can't think of his name right now.
No, well, no, that's when he.
Nick, or was it because
Nick Ward's,
was it because
Nick
of
Ward's injury is Nick what Ward. Cemented Xavier Tillman becoming a star.
Okay, yeah.
But he was a sophomore then. Xavier Tillman forced his way as a freshman into a rotation that didn't look like it had room for him.
Right. But he became a starter because of it, right? I mean, he took the position with Ward.
Yeah. And look, I am with you. I think all three of those guys you mentioned, I think, did positive things tonight. And so it's good to see them have an opportunity in a high level game to play meaningful minutes. And what you hope is that they learn from it. And that ends up helping them translate to playing winning basketball in February, you know, in March.
Yeah, right.
Right now, a game like that is probably a little bit much for those three guys, but they all did positive things. So I think it was on balance. You know, that's one of the things I like. You know, the big men, again, Alabama has a lot of length, a lot of athletes, and I was impressed by it. But I didn't think Kohler and Cooper backed down. And I thought they've got some things done. I don't know what Jackson's final numbers were, but I felt he played pretty well.
I'll tell you, he played 19 minutes. He's 3 of 8 from the field. And I think he had a couple of his misses. Boy, you think more often than not, he's going to make those, short shots. He's 0 for 2 from the line, which is a little disappointing. He had 7 rebounds. He's 4 of them offensive. He had an assist and a block. And Cooper was 1 of 2 from the line. That's pretty much all he did. But he had 2 blocks and he had two defensive boards.
Yeah, the both of his blocks, I thought, showed really good defensive instincts. And I think you can see where the projection is for him in time. This is going to be a guy who's going to help you defensively, help you defend the rim. So I feel good about that. With Jackson, I was really impressed. It's funny. I didn't really – the number you just quoted me on Pierre Brooks rebounding surprised me a little. Didn't seem to me he had that many rebounds. But Jackson Kohler, absolutely, I was aware, had that many rebounds. Mm-hmm. I thought he did a really nice job because – look, we saw, and we talked about it in the preview, right, that Alabama was number one in the country in offensive rebounding. We knew they were good because they've been good under Oates, but we didn't know how good they'd be. Michigan State might be able to, hang in there with them. Well, we saw they're legitimately a good offensive rebounding team, and yet I thought Jackson Kohler really did a nice job. And it's not the first time we've seen it. He seems to me to be one of those guys. And look, you could talk about lots of different aspects of rebounding. You know, there's definitely technical aspects in terms of, consistently being able to put a body on somebody and carve out space. Right. And there are physical aspects that you need to be strong. Need to be strong enough to secure a rebound through contact, all of those things. But the guys who are really, really good, I do believe there's some innate stuff that's hard to teach. And we have talked about this before, that there are certain guys that just have a quicker recognition or a sense of where the ball's going to go, and they get themselves there. And Jackson Kohler, I mean, in a game like that, you would have thought there would have been some moments where you're like, well, he just got beat by a guy who's a better athlete and, that kind of thing, right? I didn't really see it, not rebounding-wise.
No.
And there have been other times this year where he's shown up that way. So I'm cautiously optimistic. And you guys can do this. I mean, somebody like Matt Costello. Now, Matt Costello was a better athlete than Jackson Kohler, but he wasn't a world-beating athlete. He wasn't a great leaper or anything. Matt Costello became a very, very good rebounder in time, because he just had a knack for it. There are lots of guys like that. So I liked what I saw from those guys. And again, Carson, the one thing I would say is his guards would do him a great favor by, I'm going to use an old Judd Heathcote term, by KYP, meaning know your personnel, because when they're trying to hit him with a high velocity wraparound pass or something in traffic, that's not the guy to put in that spot. He doesn't have the hands and he hasn't played enough to feel comfortable where he's going to convert on those plays. But I liked the effort he played with. I thought he showed some things defensively. And, so that's, that's okay. And Mahdi wasn't great, but Mahdi was all right. Collectively, I don't think the fives were the problem here. I think that game was lost primarily because they couldn't do a whole hell of a lot with Miller or Quinterly.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, I think that was it. And, the other thing, I think Kohler is just sneaky good when it comes to rebounding. And I just don't, again, to your point, I don't know why that one rebound, offensive rebound he had where he got it and never brought the ball down, gathered, just sort of spun in the air and just shot it before anyone could react and kind of jump, leap again and got that put back from 6 feet or something like that. That was really impressive to me. And it showed that he just a level of intelligence. And maybe we'll see. I think Brooks has the same sort of, that innate rebounding, have an idea where the ball's going, because as you said, point out, he's not like a phenomenal athlete, but he seems to always be around the ball when it's,
He should be a good rebounder. I've seen enough of him over time to believe that. Right. He should be.
So maybe the rest comes along.
Here's the other thing,
point.
Too, on this Brooks and Kohler front. Kohler, from everything I've heard, we, you know, he's got similar physical limitations, you know, not great lateral quickness. You know, those kinds of things are an issue. He works apparently very, very hard in the film room. He shows a lot in terms of effort. And so, and I've seen enough. I'm not saying Jackson Kohler is any kind of great defender, but I have to admit, I think he's been at least a shade better than I'd expected. You know, there haven't been a lot of moments, despite the level of competition he's faced, which has been very high level. There haven't been a lot of moments where I felt like he was embarrassed. And I think that's because he's working at it, you know? So Pierre's got to pick up a little bit of that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the case. And the last thing I've just mentioned is I feel like when it comes to Kohler and Cooper, I feel like Cooper's always about one game behind. Like, you know, when at the Carrier game, Cooper seemed totally lost. Yes. And Kohler seemed like, yeah, you know, okay. And then Kentucky, same thing. Like Cooper was, again, and this game, I felt like Cooper was in the right place, but he wasn't expecting passes. Like he's still kind of, you know, I think a little bit thinking, okay, Hogarth's driving in, I'm going to get ready for the rebound. And then the ball like bounced off his shoulder or something because he just didn't expect it to come. And so I think those things will come. I mean, I definitely like the instinct, and I love the fact that he blocked the ball. It didn't hit it 20 feet out of bounds. He just, you know, he kept it in bounds where you could go on a break, both those blocks. Yeah, it's maybe the nature where, you know, they're coming straight at the basket. And so it's a little bit different, but well, let's talk about the keys to the game and sort of get through these. As I didn't mention earlier, but I'm out west. And so this is actually not as painful a recording show as it, on the road as it is for Rod, who's back home. We're obviously past midnight Eastern time. So defending the arc was the first thing. I'm Pacific time. I have no idea what time anything is right now. It was weird just watching the Lions game at 9 a.m. Defending the arc, Alabama shot 8 of 23. So they only put up 23, which I thought was pretty good. They out of 63 field goal attempts. So, about a third of their shots were threes, and they only hit a little over 33%, which is about what they've been shooting in the season. So I don't think, aside from a couple of those by Brandon Miller, who was 4 of 7 from three, they pretty much contained Alabama pretty well, I thought, on the arc.
They did. And they made a conscious choice. I said one of the things I had an issue with was there were a lot of blow-bys. But part of that was because Michigan State, I felt, was really making a commitment to limit the three looks that Alabama had. And so that was, you know, that was fairly effective. I'm not going to say it was an A-plus kind of effort, but they weren't bad in limiting. You know, the main thing you want to do, as we talked about, is you start by limit the attempts. And I don't feel, what did you say? It was 23?
23, 8 of 23. Yeah,
that's pretty average for, it might be, you know, one or two more than an average Division I team takes. And Alabama, as we know, is a well above average team in terms of the number of threes they take. But, you know, credit to them. I think they did what you should do in that scenario, which is, okay, you're going to press up on us and try to take the three, take away the three. We're going to try and take you to the basket. And they got a lot done there. I mean, there were a lot of dunks by guys in crimson.
Number two key of the game was defensive rebounding. And I'm going to go out on a limb at this point and say, I think this is a pretty good rebounding team that we've got. You know, I know we're missing Hall, we're missing Akins this game. And when you look at just overall rebounds, they had 42 and we had 40. Oh, wait, we had 42 and they had 40. So we out-rebounded them. You look at offensive rebounding percentage, Michigan State offensive rebound percentage was 37%.
Uh-huh.
And Alabama, 31%, which is...
That's a win.
Well, I mean, that's a huge win.
That's a win.
I mean, yeah, and so I think, you know, from a rebounding standpoint, we were really solid. Yeah, there were a couple that... Everyone you watch is painful when it happens, but we had more than they did as offensive rebounds, obviously.
I will say this, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'm not sure you do either, but
I do. I do know. Yeah.
What were the second chance points though?
Second chance points. So now I got to, let's see. Second chance points for Michigan State, 15 for Alabama, 11.
That strikes me as incorrect, but I'm not going to question it. It seemed to me, my sense of it was that Alabama was cashing in a lot on offensive boards. Like that was the thing that it, anecdotally it struck me as I was watching the game, as it seemed like Alabama was really converting at a fairly high clip on those chances they did get. But boy, you add all of that up, I have to say, it's not terrible.
Let me tell you the terrible thing right now then, because our next key to the game, turnovers. Yeah. Yeah. And points off turnovers, Alabama had 18 points off turnovers. Michigan State had 7.
There's your game.
Turnover
that's,
numbers.
That's the margin.
Yeah, turnover numbers. Michigan State only had 11 turnovers. Alabama had 10. And so, you know, Alabama's one of the worst turnover teams in the country. They only turned it over 10 times. And again, you know, this is, I think, more than anything, a reflection of the fact that Akins and Hall weren't there. And so you weren't putting as much stress on those guards.
You couldn't, you know, guys like Hogard and Walker, who are very effective at creating mistakes, in the opposition, you know, getting steals, that wasn't happening with regularity tonight. And I think in part it's because they had to play it a little differently. You know, again, I would like to see this team again. I would not have qualms about Michigan State facing this team in March with a full complement of their players. And that's not to denigrate Alabama. You know, the other thing you could say is Alabama is a very young team. They got a whole lot of potential to get even better. And that's true. But I just think, I would like to have seen that matchup, but that's definitely a big problem. That's really a huge difference, which tells you as much as anything that Michigan State's turnovers were almost all of the variety that led to easy points for Alabama. I mean, that's when you have 18 points on 11 turnovers, that's ludicrous. That's crazy efficiency. Yeah. I mean, that's bordering on a basket every turnover you force or get.
Pretty much, yeah, right.
So that's a big key to the game. You're right about that.
And it is interesting, too, this far into the season. I think we can safely say, and I'll regret saying this, I'm sure, but this is not a turnover-laden team, this Michigan State team. I mean, this is not a team that's
not so far.
That is the usual early season, 20 turnovers occasionally in a game or something like that. We're usually sitting around 10.
It's been
11.
Up,
I mean,
it's been
it's
up
not
and down.
Amazing.
It's been up and down. The Gonzaga and Kentucky games, they had a lot of turnovers. They were
like 15, but again, it's still only 15 or so. It's not like we're coughing up 18,
no,
20 times.
No, I think it was higher than that.
You think against, am I wrong?
Yeah, I think against Gonzaga for sure, and I want to say Kentucky too. We'd have to look at it.
Well, Kentucky, we played an extra 10 minutes, but yeah, okay.
But the Villanova game, I think they only had 12. This one, you're saying they only had 11. And this one too, this Alabama game, different from Villanova. This was played at a fairly, you know, you saw it. Alabama wants to play fast.
It's a fast pace.
Yeah. So that 11 turnover number is not terrible. You hear all of this, and truthfully, what I think it comes down to is that points off turnovers number, the difference there. So it's the nature of the mistakes as much as the mistakes themselves. And then, I guess, shooting. Michigan State, what was Michigan State's final field goal percentage overall?
Final field goal percentage for Michigan State was 44%.
Really?
35%. I'm sorry, that's Alabama's, 44%, sorry. And 35% from three. And Michigan State was 33%.
There you go. There's your ball.
39%. 39% and 28%. But yeah, it definitely is different. Yep. Well, and the points of turnovers. I mean, the difference is 11 points. And that's the difference in the score,
you know,
too, right?
MSU in that second half, as we talked about earlier, had a lot of decent looks that they just didn't hit. I also thought this. I know A.J. Hogard ended up with a nice scoring number, but I didn't like A.J. Hogard's game for a lot of this one. And in part, it was because of the things you saw him do later in the game when he started to get it going. I'm not talking about the two threes. It was obvious early in the game that if he got himself into the paint, the guys guarding him really couldn't stop it physically, you know. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't do it with any consistency at all. And I just find it's the things that drive me crazy about this guy, because you see the good things that he is capable of doing, but he didn't do them at a point in time where it mattered, where it could have settled Michigan State down. You know, Michigan State, I say that they missed a lot of good shots, and I'd stand by that. But the one thing I would say is they were relying on a lot of jumpers. When you've got a guy who's capable of getting himself into the lane and converting the way Hogarth can, man, that ought to be what you go to instinctually when you're going through a run, you know, two or three possessions in a row, you can't get a bucket. Go to something that's high percentage. Go to something that you know has a great chance of producing points. And he just didn't do it. I also think, and again, I'll give credit to Alabama for this. I don't know what MSU's final assist numbers were, but they were extremely low for a
9 assists.
Yeah. That's on how many made field goals?
24.
Yeah, that's awful. You know, and there are teams that can play winning basketball with numbers like that. There's not just one way to skin a cat. But Michigan State basketball, that's a very bad indicator. Now, some of that is because they missed so many shots that, you know, there would have been assists that weren't assists because they missed shots. But, you know, ball movement, I did not think was great.
Yeah, I think a lot of those Walker scores were with just him dribbling and getting open, and so that you're not going to assist on those,
and
right?
And give Tyson Walker credit for that, because God help us if he had not done that stuff, you know?
Yeah,
but,
totally.
But, you know, that's an indication that your offense, a Michigan State offense at least, is not flowing. I don't know what, you know, honestly, I'll give Alabama credit, I guess, for the way they defended the pick and roll, but I thought MSU really didn't get very much done there, and I was surprised and disappointed by that, because I thought there was probably an opportunity with a fairly young group. You know, I thought they might have had some chances to get Mati Sissoko on rim dives, and that just never materialized.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah, you're right. They didn't get much. Yeah, and just to get as a contrast, Alabama had 19 assists on 28 made baskets. So, you know, there's a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean,
there.
just not MSU ball movement.
Next one is transition. And, you know, fast break points, for whatever it's worth in the final things, it's Alabama had 12, which is actually kind of weird since they had 18 points of turnovers. They had 12 off fast break points. Michigan State had 10. I thought Michigan State occasionally had the break going.
Not the way.
It was nothing super impressive, I don't think.
Not the way you'd hope to see it.
Not what we'd hope for.
And again, give Alabama credit, because I thought there was a possibility with a young group, hadn't seen anything like Michigan State, that they might struggle a little more. That said, I also don't think Michigan State was going full tilt, and you can understand why. Because when you're short numbers, it becomes much more difficult. You know, that's the big problem with the next few weeks, is they're probably not going to be able to play the way they'd really like to, you know, just because of the depth, because of the numbers. You can't, mm-hmm. you know, the bodies, it's hard to play that way.
Yeah, and you wondered a little bit, the offensive rebounding numbers, maybe that had a little bit of effect to that Alabama wasn't crashing as hard as they could. I don't know. It looked like they were trying to.
Oh, I thought they were. I give Michigan State full credit for the rebounding job. I thought they, you know, obviously the numbers tell a really good story, and I thought anecdotally, just watching it, I thought they competed. I thought they battled.
Yeah, that's next one, toughness, right? I think, you know, from a toughness standpoint, they didn't, despite the deficiencies having down Akins and Hall, I thought they were the tougher team at times during that game, which is impressive.
I didn't think the guards were, especially early in the game, I didn't love how they weren't really strong with the ball. I thought there was a little bit of an issue there, but you know, the compete level was good. I just think, It's hard to come down on them too much for it, because look, the mental aspect of things was not there. Michigan State did not think this game at a high level, but part of the reason that was the case is they had a lot of guys playing a lot of minutes who don't normally do that. And so that's going to happen. You know, I can't really get, you know, Pierre Brooks, I'm going to be a little harder on, because he's in his second year in the program. And because, you know, he's a guy who I know thinks he deserves to play. And mm-hmm. so if that's the case, okay, well, you know, the onus is on you then. You got to think it at a high level, right? The freshman, I can't get upset as much about Carson Cooper or Jackson Kohler or Trey Holloman blowing an assignment. You know, that's to be expected from guys in their position. They will get better. They will learn. But I do think the effort part of that equation was definitely there tonight. I thought Michigan State competed hard. I also think, too, and it's not a major thing, but they got down 18 and everything was tilting against them. And it would have been easy to fold the 10. And they didn't do that.
Yep.
They kept playing, got it as close as 8. And so I'll give them a little bit of credit for that. Not too much, but enough.
Yeah, I don't, that weird 3-point foul again, another like a Holloman.
Yeah, that wasn't
sure
a foul.
Looked like he fouled.
That wasn't a foul.
Yeah, even, that's the second 3-pointer. And that one, I don't know. I mean, it was down to 8 points and had they, it looked like they got the stop there and then, you know, hits the 3 free throws and kind of can't. And then you can't, there's no margin for, you know, error at that point of the game with that little time left.
But I will say this, whether he got him or not, and I agree with that, I don't think he got him when you looked at the replay. But you cannot give a referee any opportunity to call a foul on you 20 feet from the basket on a jump shooter at the end of the shot clock. That kid was taking a bad shot, you know, a forced shot. And maybe he hits it, but probably not. And you just have discretion needs to be the better part of valor, right? And that was an example of it. And I'm not going to get too upset about it because Trey Holloman's still learning. And it was an effort mistake, you know. But, you just can't do that.
yeah, no question. And the guy was 0 for 4 up to that
right.
point.
So you just can't do it.
Well, I think we've probably talked about all that we need to talk about with this game. I think it's, you know, the unfortunate nature of the injuries affected more of this than, you know, anything else. And so now we're going to have to sort of figure out how to reimagine how to play with each other with the minutes and lineups and such. The next up, though, it doesn't get it does get a little bit easier, but the big name programs keep coming. Oregon, right? Oregon's next. Oregon played Connecticut and they got destroyed by UConn. And so we'll get them in consolation match sort of, you know, in the in this tournament. The loser's bracket, I guess you'd say. I don't know. I didn't have a chance to watch much of the game. So all I know is that Oregon's been a mess this year. And I know they've got some good players, but I think they've had some injuries.
That's putting it mildly. So if you're feeling sorry for yourself because Michigan State has these injuries, this gets back around to what we were talking about at the outset, the myopia that some fans go through. Talk to a fan of the Oregon Ducks. They currently have 8 available scholarship players. They have 4 guys hurt. I believe all of them are guards. So they are, and I believe 3 of them were projected starters. At least 2 were. So Oregon has a problem. They don't have guards. They've got Will Richardson. So they got 1 guy. So, you know, we know Michigan State is not a high ball pressure team like some others can be, even though I think they're a little more like that than they have been in the past. And with their numbers, you would think they certainly wouldn't want to be playing, and they're not going to play a full court pressure game, and we know that. But might they look to attack Oregon's guards a little bit more than normal in the backcourt in this game? I think the answer might be yes. And this is a big game. You know, this is a swing game. So you win this one, you've still got a chance to come out of this tournament 2-1, which, considering the circumstances, would be fantastic for MSU. So there's a lot to play for. You know, it's more or less on Oregon's home turf, so you have to deal with that. But I think this is a team that can definitely feel like they've been worse done by Lady Luck than Michigan State has. On the other end of things, they're huge. They're starting 2 7-footers. Kalel Ware, who's a freshman and a very good one. And then Infale Dante, who's a kid. I think he's a junior now. Junior or senior, but he was a guy that Michigan State looked at in recruiting several years ago and was involved for a minute before you got him. So they're playing 2 7-footers. One of the problems they've got, they've got a kid who's was a transfer a year ago from Syracuse, Quincy Guerrier. And he's kind of in the Malik Hall situation, except it's not playing out the way that it was for Malik before he got hurt. He's really struggled. So last year he averaged 10 points, 5.3 rebounds a game, shot 42% from the field at the four. Now that he's at the three, he's down to 7 points and 3.6 rebounds on 24% shooting in five games. That's not shooting from three, that's shooting period. yes. So it's tough. I mean, these guards are not coming back tomorrow. They're all out longer term. One of them is out 4 to 6 weeks. The one who's soonest, they're projecting one of them may be back next week against Washington State. But, I've got a quote from Dana Altman, their coach. You know, our guys are down. We came into the season with big expectations, and Brennan gets hurt. Keyshawn's hurt now. Jermaine's hurt. Guys we were depending on, and we haven't adjusted well. We haven't adjusted well as a coaching staff. We haven't adjusted well playing. Our ball handling is real suspect now. People know that. They get after Will, and they made it really difficult on Will tonight. We're basically out there with four forwards or three forwards and a center. We're going to have to continue to adjust and hope like heck we get some guys healthy here pretty quick. So, you know, that's the Oregon story, right?
Yeah, so I know, let's see if this sounds familiar to anyone, Michigan State fans listening, you know, who might be posting things on boards. So Brendan Rigsby's out with a foot injury.
Right.
He's doing, so he's missed at least another 2 weeks. Well, I know. This actually is news to me. So apparently other people do. Here's Christian Wright is out with a knee injury, torn meniscus. Ethan Butler, undisclosed, questionable injury. So I don't know if he ended up playing today. I have to check to see. He did not play. Then you have Jermaine Cuisinard, who's out with a knee injury.
Yeah.
Justin Rochlin is out with a knee injury, sidelines the middle of December. Keyshawn Bartholomew out with an ankle injury. And Locke Wuhr is undisclosed, and so I'm not sure if he ended up playing either. But, I mean, yeah, to say he ended up playing 2 minutes, so he actually played. But, you know, it just goes to show, I mean, you didn't hear anyone who had, a shoulder injury. I mean, they happen, right? We've seen them occasionally, but it's ankles
right.
and knees and feet.
This is what happens.
So,
right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's everybody has it. We don't pay any attention because no one cares about Oregon basketball. Who's listening to this podcast, who's listening, playing Michigan State basketball. We care about Michigan State. We maybe care about the guys down the road, but outside of that, we don't pay too much attention.
And that's exactly it. All of that is correct. I think in terms of what tomorrow's game looks like, and we're not going to do a full-blown, you know, preview with the keys or any of that, but I would just say it's clearly going to be a battle of Oregon size versus Michigan State's guards. And generally speaking, if you have to choose between those two things, you want the guard play
for sure.
I am going to say, though, this is a game where I think Michigan State's shooting clearly needs to be better. And I noticed Oregon playing some zone in that game today. If they do that, as long as Michigan State's ball movement is back to normal, Michigan State should generate a lot of good looks. This is one in particular. I think this is a matchup where Joey Hauser looms very big because he's going to be guarded by a guy who he's given up a lot of size to. So if that's the case, one, he's got to do yeoman's work on the boards, you know, even though he's given up size. But the other thing is Joey's got to hit shots because he's going to have them. They will present themselves. So he's got to hit shots. And, you know, and that I think will be a big key to the game. I think obviously MSU getting play
at the levels they expect from Tyson Walker and AJ Hogard, and getting something probably from Trey Holloman as well, also looms very, very large. Michigan State's guards have to do what we know they're capable of doing. And there's no reason they shouldn't be able to, because they will have a significant advantage over what Oregon's able to roll out there in terms of guard play.
This is going to be a very late game for me and a super late game for all of you. So I don't know, maybe if people are just going to record it and watch the next day, I don't know if I'd stay up for a midnight game. I probably would, because it's a holiday weekend and stuff, but we'll get coverage out for you after the game. I'm out here on the West Coast, and so for me, it's not as bad, but again, it's still going to be a late night for me too. So hopefully everyone had a great Thanksgiving. I'm very thankful, certainly I still really like this team, and
sure,
I really like how we're coming together, and I know their injuries right now is tough, and so, you know, if the injuries persisted, then I'd be much more sour about the season, but boy, I really like our chances still this season with the Big Ten, and although, to your point earlier, the Big Ten is good this year. I mean, it's kind of, we'll see what happens to the AC Big Ten Challenge, but everything looking right now, I mean, even Northwestern's like taking Auburn
For a second. Unfortunately, some of this stuff has come in losses, which is not ideal, but you had Wisconsin lose by a point to Kansas today. You had Northwestern lose by a point to Auburn. You know, those are games that I wouldn't have expected to be particularly close, and they were. It remains to be seen. This is what I think. I think that it very much is an open question whether the Big Ten has one or more than one team that can legitimately hope to make a Final Four run. But I think I think the odds of that look better to me now than I thought at the start of the season. And what I definitely think is possible is that the league is going to have better depth than it was expected to. I've seen the majority of the league's teams play thus far. You know, Indiana, everybody figured was going to be good, and they look, I don't think there's been anything super disappointing about them. Illinois, you know, pretty good to beat UCLA the way they did. That was impressive. Then they got beat by Virginia down the stretch. Pretty good. But again, I think Illinois has a right to feel good about themselves. Michigan State, healthy, has a right to feel good about themselves. But you get beyond that, Maryland, and they haven't played anybody really, really good, but they've played some good opposition, and they're unbeaten, and they've looked good doing it. I think that I did not expect much of Maryland in the first year of Kevin Willard's regime, and to me, they look like a team that maybe could surprise to the upside. Iowa, they haven't played a super heavyweight thus far, but they did beat Seton Hall on the road and beat them pretty easily. That's a good sign. We talked about Wisconsin, you know, Northwestern. I still think there are some bad teams. Like Minnesota is going to struggle. I think Nebraska is definitely going to struggle. But beyond that, there may not be, you know, it's going to be a dogfight. You mentioned Michigan. Michigan's looked absolutely horrendous. But, you know, there's enough there that they certainly can be a competitive team at some point. Sure. Well, what that adds up to. Oh, and I'll throw one more team that I thought has looked pretty good. Ohio State. At Maui, they got beat pretty good by San Diego State, and I think that was a first-round game. Well, San Diego State's pretty good. I saw them play a lot. They're a pretty good team. And Ohio State responded with two straight impressive wins, and I saw some of them earlier this week. That's a team to watch out for. I mean, I know I picked them fourth, so it wasn't like I didn't expect them to be good, but I think there's real potential for that group. So, yeah, the league's going to be a dog. We haven't even talked about Purdue. Purdue's still unbeaten. They're in the other bracket in Portland, the Phil Knight Legacy bracket. And, you know, they're probably going to play Gonzaga tomorrow, so that'll be an interesting test for them. But they've played pretty decent basketball in the early going, including today beating West Virginia pretty easily.
I would say too, I've watched a couple of Iowa games, and you know, for the three Iowa fans listening to the show here, I will say, I don't, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but I really think Chris Murray looks better than Keegan Murray did at this point of the season last year.
Wow.
And, you know, he's a better shooter than Keegan was. And I don't know that the rest of the parts around Iowa are, well, they're pretty much the same. So I would expect them to be about as good, except that they don't have two Murrays. They just have one. And so that'll be the one big difference from last year's team. And I don't know that the other pieces are really that much better than they were last year. So that may limit them. But as an individual player, I did not expect that. I really expected Chris to be a number of steps below Keegan. So we'll see. That's, you know, another thing that maybe get people worried about.
It's going to be shaping up to be a very competitive league, which, that's bad news from a Michigan State perspective because, you'd hope that maybe there would be a few more gimmies than we normally see, and that seems to be out the window. But I would say on the positive end of that, the league's strength is going to pay benefits for everybody, you know. If you don't have a lot of bad losses, and conversely, you have the potential for a lot of good wins, that's what you want.
Yeah, and Michigan State's definitely racked up two very good wins, or I suppose three to this point in the season, right? Two. Hopefully we'll get another Power 5 win against Oregon tomorrow or today. I guess it depends how you look at it. So I guess we'll wrap it up here, and hopefully you guys have a chance to listen to this and then continue to share it with your friends. If you do want to support the show financially, again, we super appreciate that. You can go do that at thefinalforceontheschedule.com/support. Please check out our website anyway and just head on over there, and you can sign up either to get email notices where I send one out every once in a while, but also you get notices if we're doing anything, and also you can join our bulletin board and be part of the forum. So until next time, the Final Four is not on the schedule. Go Green. Thank you.